this is the thing people don't realize. Vulnerability is the most scary for a relationship, but you can't be fully loved unless you're fully known. And you can't be fully known unless you're completely vulnerable. Vulnerability and humility. Sexiest attributes that you can possess. Yeah, I'm really glad that you said underneath the surface, because that's exactly what it is. When you're having the same fight over and over, you're just looking at the surface level problem. The problem is not money. The problem is not chores. The problem, if you are consistently having conflict with those, if you're consistently unable to agree, if you're consistently like, okay, we'll just do what you want to do because that's what always happens anyway. Guess what? You're not training for a healthy team. You're training for individuals, and essentially, and honestly, you're training for divorce.
Welcome to the Live Your Best Marriage podcast. Today we are talking about something that every couple needs, but many couples forget, that your marriage is a very important team. And a lot of couples love each other, but they are not training like a team, because they react, they blame, they shout down, avoid conflict, and most of the time they also parent like roommates, or keep repeating the same patterns like they never meant to pass on. Our guest today is Cameron Alecki. She's a Gottman Certified Marriage Coach, the host of the Married and Connected podcast, and the founder of the Recognizing Potential Coaching Program. She helps couples improve communication, resolve conflict, deepen connection, and apply practical tools so that marriage does not just survive, but becomes intentional. Cameron, welcome to the Live Your Best Marriage.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with you guys.
Yes. Welcome. All right. So, Cameron, your line is so strong. It's your marriage is your most important team. It's time to start training like it. What do you mean by that? And why do so many couples treat marriage like it's something that should just work automatically?
Because that's what we're taught. We're taught that just because you're old enough to get married, that you're mature enough to get married. And that is the most, that is the biggest lie that we could ever hear or believe. And so the reason that I say that is that when you go, any goal that you are trying to achieve, right? Let's say you're trying to bench press or squat 500 pounds. Yes. You're not just gonna walk into the gym and bench press or squat 500 pounds and be like, okay, goal achieved, yes, awesome. You're not gonna buy. Marriage is the same way. We are spending tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars on weddings, and it's one, you wake up the next morning and you're like, and now what? You just keep living your life, and that's great until kids and a mortgage and dogs and cats and whatever, new jobs all enter the picture. And the problem is, every single conflict you get into, every single thing that you, do you want this lamp or this lamp? Do you like these drapes or these drapes? Do you want to this city for your job or this city for my job, or do we commute? Every single circumstance and scenario that you are offered in life are reps that you are training for. And if you are consistently having conflict with those, if you're consistently unable to agree, if you're consistently like, okay, we'll just do what you want to do because that's what always happens anyway. Guess what? You're not training for a healthy team. You're training for individuals, and essentially, and honestly, you're training for divorce, but we as a society are training for divorce in the dating stage. It doesn't work out.
Can you say that again? Because I feel like that is so important. So we're training for divorce when we are dating?
Yep. We are training for divorce even in the dating stage, because every time it doesn't work out. Here's the thing, you guys. Look at you guys, right?
Yes.
Your situation. You guys work because you choose to work every day, right? Yes. Every relationship that you get into works because you choose to make it work.
You're right.
Working in dating scenes right now, especially, right? One red flag, you're gone. Moving on next. Okay, I'm sorry, have you looked in the mirror lately? Do you not also have red flags? Nobody is qualified to be in a marriage, but we think we're qualified simply because we're 18, 19, 20. We have hormones, we have chemistry, right? That's the first thing that everybody says. We have so much chemistry. Fun fact, friend, that chemistry is actually just your insecure attachment being attracted to their insecure attachment. That's it.
That's so important.
You have not qualified yourself to be in a marriage. And then we wonder why the divorce rate is at 60%. Because this is what we're training for. Why I'm super, you can tell, I'm super passionate about that. That's why my tagline is what it is.
And so what do you think that couples are not really practicing enough in their training? Is it like communication? Is it like, what's the thing that they really need to practice as they're training together as a couple?
What they are practicing right now is repetition of the conditioning that they lived in. It's because when you grow up and you're, and this is why marriage is such an important teamwork position as well, is that you guys, you have what, 4 kids? Is that what you were telling me? So you guys have 4, we have 2. So yes. Together, that's 6 children. That are looking at their parents and being like, okay, so as a man, this is how I act as a man. Your boys are learning, this is how I act as a man. Yep. This is how I treat women. This is how I show up and I handle stress and I handle life and I handle all of the things and being a protector and a provider. As a woman, your boys are looking at you, Whitney, and they're saying, okay, what's acceptable? What kind of a woman do I need to choose? All of those things. My boys are looking at me the same way. If you have girls, they're looking at you as a woman and being like, okay, how do I need to show up as a wife? What do I need to learn as a woman? How do I be a woman? As a man, Pesa, they're looking at you and being like, what kind of a man do I need to choose?
You're right.
Now, that was a gut punch for some of your listeners. Some things need to change. And this is where I come in. So this is the thing, is that what they are training for is we're repeating exactly what our moms and dads taught us. Now, if your parents didn't handle conflict well or didn't at all, guess how you're going to handle conflict? Same way.
The same way.
If you didn't grow up seeing your parents pray or eat healthy or drive or they had road rage all the time, or if they were a yeller or whatever, even though, I'll give you a perfect example. I have a cousin that grew up, his mom smoked. And he said for his entire life, I'm never going to be a smoker. This is disgusting. I hate it. Blah, blah, blah. He's 42 years old and a smoker. Statistically, those who are physically or sexually abused, they grow up saying, I will never inflict the exact same trauma on other people that was inflicted on me. And then they do. It does, conscious, and we don't even realize it. It's the exact same, the part of your brain that allows you to drive home every single day and you're driving the same route. And some days you get home and you're like, I don't even remember going through that stoplight. But you know, that's the route you take every day. It's the same thing that is then running your marriage and running your entire life. We as human beings, neurologically, we live 95% of our life on autopilot. So to go back and answer your question of what we should be doing, we should be training so that we're rewiring our brain, not to repeat the conditioning that we were given, but to actually live out what we choose to live.
Yes.
How we choose to show up. Yeah, my dad might have been a yeller, but I'm not going to be that way. Everything I can to choose not to be a yeller.
Yes. And as we're talking about training, that means you have talked about the reps. Mm-hmm. That means you are daily adding up the reps, and if you fall, you stand up again and do it again.
Keep going. Yeah. Up every day. You wake up, you open your eyes, thank you, God, for another day. And then you say, all right, where do I need work? Where? And then that's your focus. That is your main purpose for that day, is bettering yourself so that you become 1% better every single day.
1% better.
Yep.
Absolutely. And
do you have something to add to that?
I did. I had another question for you. If a couple says, we keep having the same fight over and over again, what do you think is usually happening underneath the surface?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you said underneath the surface, because that's exactly what it is. When you're having the same fight over and over, you're just looking at the surface level problem. The problem is not money. The problem is not chores. The problem is not the unequal division of the household labor. That's not the problem, okay?
Yes.
You have to figure out what that means to your partner and actually cut out the defensiveness and the ego and listen to understand. So for example, money. Money is never about money. Money is about power, about respect, okay, about freedom, or about security. So money means something to you. For most women, it means security. For most men, it means something else. Freedom, respect, or power.
Okay.
So we don't have enough money. We're not, you know, like maybe he's afraid of not being respected in the community. Maybe he's afraid of that he has a certain number in his mind, and that's information that he has that now his wife does not have. That if he hits that number, then that means that he's more powerful than his dad, or more powerful than, whatever the case is, right? But have that information. To her, it's just security. So if we have enough to pay our bills every month, we're good. And that means that I've got extra left over to buy on Amazon. Right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
And no, that's not the case, because here's the other thing. Men usually see big picture where women see details. So when you go to buy a house, a man can walk in and be like, that's not structurally sound. This is not how that, no, I don't like the layout there.
Yep.
And the woman's seeing, this is where we're going to put the Christmas tree, and this is where I'm going to hang these, and this is how the blinds are going to go, and this is what it's going to look like if we have family dinners. She didn't care about the structural soundness of that house. Also, why men and women are such good teammates, because what you bring to the table is usually what your spouse is terrible at, and what they bring to the table is usually what you need a little bit of work in.
So what's that team?
That's where the teamwork is, and you're seeing different things. One is macro, one is micro. So you have to look at those as well. So that fight that you keep having over and over, you're not even fighting in the same dimension. One of you, you're having something else, like you're fighting over freedom or exhaustion or fear somewhere there. Okay.
Yes.
So once you dive down and you niche down to figure out what the fear is for both of you, now we're having an entirely different conversation.
Different conversation.
Yep.
And we've had the same issue. One time we went to buy an SUV, and I'm thinking about the mileage and how well it's going to handle the roads and things like that. Mm-hmm. But she was, can you explain?
The first thing I did was I went all the way back to the third row. And I was just thinking, okay, so Sophie's going to sit here. Isabella's going to sit here. I mean, I was just all like thinking about the room and, you know, how much space they would have. And are they going to be fighting?
And how easy is it? Am I going to have to climb my whole body in here? Do I have room for groceries, even on our biggest Costco haul day? Yeah, like all those things.
Yeah,
and
did not cross my mind. Nope. I was just thinking how well it's going to save on gas, how it compares to the other car that we are getting rid of, and how much it will cost to every month. So all these things were in my mind, but I was not thinking about the exact spot where each kid will sit.
Yeah. And here's the thing. This is another reason, like that ego, we all get in that ego space and we're fighting to be right.
Yeah.
But in this, like, this is a perfect example that you gave. There's no right or wrong in either of those. It's just different perspectives. And you have to get the other perspective before you can make an educated decision.
Yes. Yeah. And that was, you know, a beginning of our marriage. That used to be a big problem for us, because I would just think that whatever I'm thinking is the right way.
Mm-hmm.
That would really tick off Whitney, because she would think, okay, he's not really understanding where I'm coming from. Yeah. If we went to, let's say we go for grocery shopping, I'm so focused on the price.
Yep.
While she's trying to see how things are gonna, are the kids gonna like it? Are they gonna even eat it? I'm thinking, is it healthy? But she's okay, are they even gonna eat it? We can buy it, but will they even like it?
So in that case, even that, look at the perspective there. You're thinking about price. She's also thinking about price, but in a different way. Because if your kids aren't going to eat it, that $7.95 that you just spent is now a wasted $7.95.
It is wasted. You're right.
Yeah.
It is wasted. And it takes a while as a couple to start getting rid of the ego Yep. And start realizing that for this to work, I also need to take her point. Her point is also valid the way mine is also valid.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I have another question for you. All right, how can couples stop letting conflict become me versus you and start treating the problem as the enemy?
Yeah. So what we just talked about, seeing each other's perspectives, but also here's another one, is that people are so afraid of confrontation because confrontation a lot of times meant, I mean, that's a filter that you have that was created in your childhood. Okay.
Yes.
Here's the deal. Confrontation, that word down, confront, right? You're just bringing the cons of the relationship to the front. That's it. It's no different than people who are stocking grocery store shelves and they're moving the food that needs to be eaten first to the front instead of reaching towards the back. That's it. We just have to rewire our brain to realize that this is not the horrible, hairy, bad wolf that we're making it. It's, we're just bringing the cons to the front. So we're having a conversation about this. And if your partner is bringing it to you, there's a reason that they're bringing it to you. So getting out of that ego and saying, okay, this is my person. I was just working with a couple the other night and they, you know, they both kept saying things like, this is my rock. This is my person. This is my better half. This is my other half. And then they're criticizing each other and they're tearing each other down and they're, you did this and you said that. And I'm sorry. 5 minutes ago, you were telling me that this is your rock and this is your words and your actions are not really matching up here.
Yeah, not aligning.
Yeah, exactly. So again, getting that out of that subconscious mind and into your conscious mind and saying, how am I making my partner my enemy? And why am I even looking at them as my enemy? Have they done something so incredibly horribly wrong that now I have to defend myself, that now I have to protect myself from them? Because if that's the case, you probably shouldn't be in that marriage.
Yes.
But also, you also have to look at yourself. And this is the hardest part. Nobody wants to look at their own beliefs, at their own defense mechanisms, at their own childishness, and all of that to say, okay, where am I in the wrong here? So what usually ends up happening when you're in that situation as you're standing in the middle of your yard of 3 foot tall grass and trash everywhere and broken down cars in the driveway, and you're yelling across the street at your partner being like, hey, when are you going to clean that mess up? Hello?
Wow. Wow. Okay. So I do have another question for you. Now that you've done such a great job of explaining that whole thing. Now, can you just help us out here? How can they move forward after that?
Yeah, so this is really tough. So when you are 4 and in preschool, what we're taught, and again, this goes back to conditioning, what we're taught is, okay, you took that friend, that toy from your friend, so you need to say sorry and then move on.
Yes.
We get into relationships and our partner says sorry, but do they change the behavior? Are they actually sorry? Are they just saying sorry because now they're hungry and they want dinner and they know we're not going to make dinner if we're not sorry? Is there a manipulation tactic there? And if they do say sorry and they mean it, do we actually feel like, okay, sorry is enough? No, usually not. So what we have to do is we have to learn how to repair. Okay. So 5-finger apology. This is how I teach my clients. Okay. 5-finger apology. If you just attacked your partner, they may need space. They may need 20 minutes, 30 minutes to calm down, to regulate. They may need a couple of hours to regulate depending on their capacity, okay? Human body, the whole human brain, only recognizes an emotion for 90 seconds.
That's just 90 seconds?
90 seconds. But if you're mad 3, 4, 5 hours later, it's because you keep ruminating on what happened, right? So think about a little baby. They're mad, yeah, right? You moved them, or you didn't let them touch that hot stove, or you took the toy away from them because now it's time to eat or whatever, right? They're upset. And then 90 seconds later, you give them a different toy or you move on. And they're like, oh, happy as a clam.
Yeah, they move on.
Yeah, everything is fine. Because they don't have the ability to continue to go back and ruminate over, this is what she meant by this. Oh, this, oh, I should have said this. This is what was more, oh man, oh, I missed an opportunity to get a dig in there.
Yep.
All of that. So instead we have to, again, tie that ego to a stake and burn it. Everything goes back to ego. So when we attack, we have to own it. We have to own our one, even if our issue is 1% of the problem. Anytime there's conflict, both people have a part to play in that. Anytime. Okay? Yes. Even if it's 1% and 99%, how could you have done that? How could you have said that more maturely? That's all.
Yes.
Okay? Then that's when we have to repair. So we have to look at ourselves first. We have to see how we contributed to the issue. Then we repair. Five fingers. Four, name what you did. That, so it actually shows that you know what you did.
Yes.
Here's how it impacted you. Now you're saying, I know that this is why you're mad. I'm sorry for, I know it impacted you in this way. Here's how I'm gonna change that behavior in the future. Here's what I'm gonna do in the future. Now, couple things on this. The changed behavior, that is the apology. Because without that, it's just manipulation. Okay? Will you forgive me? A lot of times we have this misconception that if we say, will you forgive me, that our partner has to say yes. That's true.
Yes.
If you forgot to take the trash out, okay, I'll forgive you for messing up. If you forget to take the trash out every single Thursday, now we got an issue. And no, I'm not gonna forgive you because you keep doing it. It's a pattern. Okay? If you cheat on me, no, probably not ready to forgive you right now.
Yes.
Right? Something like that, okay? If you forget to fill the gas tank up because you said you would that morning, yeah, of course I'm going to forgive you. There's levels to severity here, all right? But here's the deal. When you apologize in that way, it's not only showing that you are genuinely remorseful for what you did, it's also helping you communicate that, hey, I know how this is affecting you. I know why you're upset. Here's how we can fix that. Now, when you've asked, will you forgive me? Your partner has the opportunity then to say yes, or they will come to you if and when they are ready to forgive. That's not, that forgiveness is not for you. It's for them so that they don't continue to harbor resentment.
And I like what you say, that the changed behavior is the forgiveness. So that means I'm also gonna, I have something to do, which is change the behavior. So if every day I'm asking for forgiveness, but I'm not changing my behavior, I am not serious about changing.
Correct. And that's also going back to the question you asked Whitney about the repeated issues. That may be the issue. You guys are fighting over the trash not being taken out every Thursday, but the issue is not the trash. The issue is you keep forgetting. I'm the one that's having to carry that load and remind you. And now I feel like I have another child. I don't feel like I have a partner.
Right.
And I really love this, the way you're using the team language, because we deal with a lot of couples from different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And with this, when we're using the team language, it basically shows that it's not that your culture is going to win, or, you know, you came from the dominant culture, so you are winning and then the other person's culture will not win. But we are saying we are married, we have the covenant, we are married, and we are working as a team. So it's not saying, oh, I mean your country, so your culture is dominant. That means you are the one who wins these arguments. But no, it's, we are a team, and we are the covenant, the marriage that we have is what wins.
Exactly.
Yes.
You two, it's that choice, right? It's that I'm bringing in this culture and this culture, and we're making a marriage and a covenant out of both cultures. But in order for that to happen, we both have to have guidelines and standards that we are working towards, that we are training for, those reps, that rep after rep. Otherwise, it does end up being contemptuous, where one person's, nope, you're an American now, sir. This this is how this is going to go. And I've been there. I get it. Obviously, I am blonde-headed and blue-eyed and the most white person ever, right? My last name is Alariki. That's Middle Eastern. So I get it. I get the meshing of cultures and all of that. Completely
yes.
understand it. But that's the beauty of marriage, is that this is how I describe it to my clients. When you're married, like when you're first born, you get this invisible suitcase. And then you go through your entire life filling your suitcase full of experiences and education and exposures and all these things, right? And then
yes.
you get married. And both of you dump those suitcases out on the living room floor the first day that you're married. And then you get to spend the rest of your marriage, however long that is, sifting through all of that stuff and saying, what do we put on shelves? What do we put out for everyone to see? What do we only bring out at holiday time? What do we shove in a closet and don't look at for 20 years? What do we throw away because, whoa, we do not even want that in our house.
Yeah.
What do we call our mom and be like, you can have that back? You know what
yeah.
I mean? What are we doing with that? And so it's really important to look at all of that and sort through it together and actually create
yes.
a home based on those, not necessarily what society says, what our parents say. They don't pay our bills. So why
right.
is it what we're doing in our marriage and in our home?
Yes.
Right.
And that's very funny. Not funny, but there was that makes me remember there was a time, maybe Whitney can tell this better, because remember that story where I brought a side of goat home? And
oh,
to,
God.
So,
you'd only been married for, gosh, maybe about a year. And he went and bought a whole side of goat. In Kenya, that's goat meat is very popular.
Sure.
And so he brought it home unprocessed. I had never seen meat like that before in my life, ever. It even still had some of the fur on it. And so he just handed me this huge bag and he's like, okay, so I want you to cook this for dinner tonight. And I'm thinking like, okay, great. So I went ahead and like, figured out this like slow cooker meal and I served it to him and say we can laugh about it now, but that night there was a lot of tension in our home that evening.
Yeah, and it's one of those things.
Yeah.
So I'm showing up with my culture and I'm happy me and my friends had gone on a goat and we had split it, so I was so happy about it, but to her it was something that was like, what is this?
Yeah.
And we had to,
yeah.
she didn't.
No.
And looking back, it could have been done differently because I was so stuck on that my culture is the right way.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't see how that she also had her own culture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When I were married, gosh, we'd probably only been married 3 years, maybe. And he one time blew up because like none of the house was just what it was. Like he had come in, I had already been married once before. And when he came back from Egypt, he came back with two suitcases. That was it, right? Moving in. And I kept saying every time we'd move, every time we got new furniture or whatever, it was always just, whatever you want. There was never any, okay, I would really like to have this type of decor. I would really like to have something from my country. Every time we went to Egypt, I was like, do you want to take anything back? Nah, we're good. Everything's fine. We would take back spices and things like that. Never
yes.
needed one. One day, it was like he had been shoving paper into a bottle for four years now. And he just erupted like Mount Vesuvius. And so I was like, whoa, what is happening here? And he's, this house doesn't even feel like home. It doesn't have anything of me in it. I'm like standing there looking at him and I'm like, that's easily rectified. Like when I ask you, when we're in your country, do you want to bring something home? That would be a really good time for you to be like, yeah, let's go down to Khan El Khalili Market and grab a rug or grab a tapestry or anything.
Yes.
But instead you say, nah, we're good.
Yep.
No, we're not good, actually. Like,
yes.
I need some guidance here. I don't know what middle
decor
looks like.
Yes.
So,
right.
yeah, that stuff happens all the time.
Yes, and I understand where he was coming from because
yeah.
we're basically raised in a place where you are not, you don't participate in your design, in your interior design and all that stuff. It just happens. Yeah. So when you are put in that situation, so you are brought up thinking that all you have to do is earn and provide for your family, but you are not there to learn to do all this. What couches should we have? What rugs should we have? You, that is never in your radar.
Yeah.
When it's being asked, you don't want to learn a new way of doing things. You just say, you know what, handle it, because that's, as long as I'm handling my part, which is providing, everything is fine until it's not fine.
Until it's not fine. Yeah.
Until
and
it's
this,
not fine.
This is part of that living in autopilot.
Yeah.
When you're living in that subconscious zone all the time, yes, it is going to be exhausting, and it does take effort to get into that 5% of the conscious effort, conscious mind time. The more that you do that, the more capacity you're building. So stress resilience, where like think about cold plunges, right? You don't get into a cold plunge and sit there for 5 minutes the first time. You're gonna freeze to death. But if you get in for 15 seconds and then the next time it's 30 and the next time it's 35 and 40 and you work your way up, again, you go into the gym, you're not going to bench 500 pounds right off the gate.
No way.
Right? So you're adding weight every single time. It's the same thing here. When you're staying in that 5% time, 6%, and then 7%, and then 8%. Yes, it is exhausting. Just like going to the gym would be, just like doing a cold plunge would be. But also, I guarantee you, it is so much less painful, so much less exhausting, so much less hard than divorce, than splitting up holidays with your kids, than living in two different homes, than disease, than, you see what I'm saying? Like,
But
when you're training for that, and a little over time, 1% better every single day, increasing that capacity, increasing those thoughts, getting real with what you really believe. Is it really fine that we're not taking back decor from your home country? Or do we need to grab one or two little things this time and one or two little things next time?
Next time.
Those little things, it's the microscopic moments of your life together that create when you're 95 years old, sitting on the front porch, drinking sweet tea, looking out at the sunset and talking about how we needed this rain. That's the life that you have built over time, little by little.
I want that. I want that. So if a couple is listening to you right now and they're like, okay, Cameron, what can we repair? What can we start practicing this week to start repairing? Like, how do we even go through this whole process? What should we start with this week?
I would say go back to think about your partner. What do they complain about the most? And every couple has this, right? You can look at your wife, can look at you and be like, if I had to coin three phrases that my partner says the most, here's what they are. This is always a problem. What are those things?
Okay.
Look at your contribution to those things. Okay. And as bad as it's going to suck, because we don't ever want to think, man, our partner's right. I don't listen. I don't communicate very well.
If she was nice.
So we look at our part in those, and then we go to our partner and we say, hey, here's what I've realized. Here's how I know it impacted you. This is what I'm gonna do in the future. Will you forgive me? And this is the other thing about that repair, you guys. People are like, that's gonna take six paragraphs. It's gonna be so long. No, it literally sounds like this. Hey, I'm really sorry for missing dinner and being late. I know you worked really hard on that dinner today and that you were really tired. In the future, I'm going to send a text before I leave the office, or I'm going to send a text if I'm going to be 15 minutes late. Will you forgive me? What was that? 17 seconds?
Yes.
All it takes. That's all it takes.
And it's so thoughtful that if you're talking like that to your wife or to your husband, it's hard for them to like, like you have literally, like not dismissed, but diffused everything.
Yeah. Bringing the tension down a little
bit. The tension just went down.
Mm-hmm. This is the thing people don't realize. Vulnerability is the most scary for a relationship, but you can't be fully loved unless you're fully known. And you can't be fully known unless you're completely vulnerable. Vulnerability and humility. Sexiest attributes that you can possess as an individual for your marriage. I don't know any person, man or woman, that if their partner came to them and gave them a five-finger apology like that and changed the behavior, that it wouldn't be like, okay, I'll give you whatever you want.
Yeah.
Just take me to the bedroom right now. Like,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I agree.
I like that. It sounds so practical that you can use it every day instead of just, but the five finger apology is so practical that anytime I'm already thinking about how I'm going to use my five finger apology.
This is the thing, Pissa, this is exactly why I didn't become a therapist. I have paid more money to Kansas State University for education. Yeah. I changed my major 11 times in college. 11. Okay. My advisor hated me. Okay. Like, hi. And she'd be like, no, go think about this a little bit longer. That's just because I didn't know what I wanted to do. But this is the thing that once I found marriage, I'm like, this is it. This is the God-given calling, right?
Amen.
But this is the thing is that we don't realize that education isn't enough. We don't realize that everything that we're learning, like the apology, it's all conditioning. It's all conditioning. We don't even, like, we don't even realize what we are doing or saying is practical that I do as a coach, because as a therapist, they're only taught what they're taught, right? And that's great. And I don't want to dog on therapy too much, because I do believe that therapists have a time and place, especially for like grief and things like that. But for marriages, statistically, they make marriages 91% worse in between sessions.
Yeah.
So like, when you go to your session then on Thursday, all you're doing is crash it happened Monday night when you were arguing, right? So
you're not
tools that you need to move forward. That's why I became a coach. Because all of that education at Kansas State University, I was like, no, like, this is not going to get me where I want to go, right? This is not going to give me what I need in order to truly equip couples and qualify them as individuals to be in that marriage. That's why you're in a therapist's office for 4 years and you're like, why does my marriage still suck?
And yeah, you're right. Most of the time before you go to your next therapy session, you have to dredge up all the drama because next time you show up on Thursday at 7 p.m., you will be asked. And number one, you want to show that you are really wronged so that the therapy can really go well. And most guys will just keep quiet. They're like, whatever. The therapist and my wife are just ganging up on me.
Yeah. That's the one thing I will say that men really appreciate, because as you guys have figured out, I'm not Willy Wonka. I don't sugarcoat anything. I'm very straightforward. I'm very practical. Yes. But at the same time, I run it like a sports team. Even my coaching is team-based. Like, the wife will get on Voxer. It's an app like a walkie-talkie. Men also love that, because your inner seven-year-old is like, ooh, walkie-talkies? Yeah. So you talk to me and you hash out, okay, this is what's happening on Monday night, right? And so the wife's my husband and he's blah, blah, blah. And my response to that is, okay, what'd you do? What was your part in that? And having them look at that. And so it's never, yes, you might be in the hot seat one day. She'll be in the hot seat eventually.
Yes.
So it's never... It's also very, here's a play, here's a tool, go run it, come back to me, tell me what worked, tell me what didn't work, let's tweak it, and then you go run it again. Until it's a well-oiled system.
And you're running it in your own life,
yep.
So you're tweaking it because you want to make it work for your family.
For your family, not textbook, not, this is what works for 97% of Americans. Well, congrats. No. 97% of Americans don't have the same nuances that I have in my marriage. So
yes. And for cross-cultural couples, that is a big thing. 97% of the population doesn't have that nuance. And it might be from different countries. You might come from the same country, but different. You're coming from different parts of the country, different tribes. So that brings a different way of viewing life.
Even if you think about it, like, my mom has two sisters, right? That my mom versus her middle sister versus her younger sister, the way that they all parent, completely different. The feeling of their homes, completely different. The way that they show up for their marriages, completely different. So the way that I show up versus my middle brother versus my youngest brother. We all have very same DNA,
yep.
very wildly different cultures in our families. And so because yes. of that, even that, the familial culture can throw a monkey wrench into your marriage if you're trying to do something exactly the same way.
Same as, with everything.
Yeah.
And we've noticed that with our four girls. And we think it's because they were born in different times of our relationship.
Yep. Different stages.
Different stages. Yeah. And now we are more like laid back.
Yeah, we're more relaxed now, I think.
Yeah, more relaxed versus when we were with the oldest, the 19-year-old, when we were more intense, trying to get everything right.
Yeah, yeah.
So she...
But also, your 19-year-old kind of grew up with you guys. Which
yep.
is why I tell my 16-year-old this all the time, right?
Yes.
But also, each of your four, and this is very important too, especially for marriage. This is why it's so important to understand instead of forcing your beliefs onto your partner or instead of proving that you're right. Because what your 19-year-old needs is wildly different than what your 9-year-old
right.
needs.
You're
like,
right.
Yeah, even my boys, my 16-year-old, I always compare it to the memes that are like, I was so worried that this world would be too harsh for my kind and considerate oldest. And then it's like, then his little brother came along and it's Hugh Jackman walking out of a building and the building's blowing up behind him. Right there. With Mason, I could look at him and be like, don't do that again. And he'd be like, all right, I'm out. I'm done. My second is, but why? Because if you're gonna tell me not to do it, but why? That's not a logistical enough reason. So I'm gonna do it again just to see what's gonna happen. You're going to actually follow through with that period.
So now you have to be more consistent with what you say. Yeah.
Yeah. But then he's going to give you a hug and a kiss and be like, you're so pretty, mama.
Oh.
Get out.
We have that.
Yeah.
So what he needs is completely different than what his needs. I look at his dad all the time. I'm like, he's yours. You deal with this.
Yeah, we have that one too. Yeah. Oh, the one who will always hug you.
Oh my goodness. That sounds familiar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they need different things. And in your marriage, you need different things too. This is the thing that, like, at different stages of your life, you guys aren't the same people that you were 20 years ago.
No, we're not.
What you need now may be completely different than what you needed when you were 20 or 25 or 30.
Yes.
And that's why it's really important to constantly be getting to know your person all the time as well. And not just be like, I asked you that question when we were dating, so I don't need to ask it again. We're good.
Oh,
yeah.
Things have changed.
Yes.
Yeah. How can our audience find you if they want to go further with you and either get your coaching or just get more of your resources?
Yeah. Instagram at mary.ann.connected. You can go to my website, www.recognizingpotential.com. I'm everywhere at Married and Connected. Instagram, Substack, LinkedIn, Facebook. If you search Married and Connected, I'm going to come up. My podcast is Married and Connected. Really, the only thing that's not is the website. Because when you get into being an entrepreneur, you don't think about the ease of spelling things when you make a website.
Yeah. Because, those are the things that when you look back, you're like, I wish I
would have done this a little different. And the website's probably coming eventually, but that's a back burner issue right now.
But we love your message. And I'm going to start using this 5-finger apology. And there's something that you also said, that the changing behavior is the forgiveness. That I don't know why it seems so profound, but it's such a no-brainer. You have to change your behavior.
Yeah, changed behavior is the apology.
It's the apology.
Yeah, it is the apology.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm going to just wrap it up. So today we were with Cameron Alecki, and we learned a lot here at the Live Your Best Marriage podcast. And until next time, bye and God bless.
And thank you so much for being here, Cameron, and it was wonderful meeting you.
Thanks for having me. I can't wait to have you guys on the Married and Connected show not too far from now.